My name's Luke Humphrey, this is Prasanna Adavi, and today we'll talk about adding objectivity and rigor with portfolio analysis and optimization using Project Online. Quick introductions. So I've been a program manager on the Project product group for about 8 years. I've worked on a number of features, including integrating the portfolio analysis feature set a few years ago. I've also worked on demand management, Active Directory synchronization, a lot of the project professional features. I have also been involved in facilitating our own product group using this feature set to do subsequent release planning. So we actually use the tools here. We dog food the tools and we use them as part of our product planning.
And I'm Prasanna Adavi, and you'll notice that I'm standing like this because you can see Luke with his height. You can't see me behind this monitor. Right. So I have been a project manager or an EPM consultant altogether for 9 years, either one of those roles. I work for a company called EPMA. We are one of the premier PPM consulting companies out of Houston. And there are contact details for both for my company and also my personal contact details in case you want to get in touch. Back to you.
Great. The agenda is pretty straightforward today. We'll set the table with just talking briefly about what PPM is. We'll talk about signs that you may need to adopt PPM in your department or org. We'll do a process overview focusing on the demand management project lifecycle as it runs through the creation and selection phases. Most of the presentation today will be a demo as we walk through of all this and show you guys how to do this. There are a lot of areas where you can turn a corner and go really deep. This session is going to be mainly a high-level overview of all the features, but we can talk about some of the depth stuff afterward in the Q&A. Project and portfolio management, what is it? So the practice of identifying, selecting, and managing a portfolio of projects, or it could be any investment, could be applications. Some people call these things initiatives. But the practice of doing that as it aligns to strategic objectives, respecting resource capacity. If you implement PPM in your org, you can see a lot of benefits. Those include, first and foremost, executive consensus and visibility on what your strategic objectives are. It can help you manage risks and have a view on resource capacity relative to resource demand. Some framework and structure for really getting the maximum value out of all of your investments, maximizing your ROI. It can provide objectivity and rigor in how you do your decision making. So things that are less sort of emotional decision making, less sort of doing things because we've done them that way in the past, and more methodology and objectivity for how you make your investment decisions. And then finally, with features like our business intelligence feature set, the features in Project Web Access, you can have enhanced visibility from the end-to-end process and aid in communication to your stakeholders and to your team. This slide shows you all of the components of PPM, from program management to time reporting to schedule management. The two areas we will focus on, I just kind of wanted to use this laser pointer, are demand management and portfolio analytics and selection. That'll be what the demo covers, those areas. Primarily portfolio analytics and selection. Signs you might need PPM. Squeaky wheel gets the oil. If you have some loud people in the group that sort of can exert their influence to get investments selected just because they're loud or influential, but less about them actually understanding how those investments align to the strategy relative to their cost, PPM can help there.
How many of you actually do portfolio management today in your companies? So how is it working for you? Okay, and have you had scenarios where no matter what your tool says, I just want to get this project, it needs to happen? So that's a very common scenario. I have worked with many customers where regardless of whether you have a tool to do it or not, it's always, okay, today it is, okay, we'll upgrade our entire ERP system. You keep working, you put an entire team working on that. Tomorrow it is, oh, let's all move to Office 365. Then 3 months later, it's like, no, we'll go back to Lotus Notes. And just because there are multiple executives fighting for attention. So I think what we're trying to say here is the tool, the Project Online, the Portfolio Analytics gives you a chance to show what should be the right things to do, and then take it further.
Yeah. Too many urgent projects. You know, everything needs to get done, but how do you pick the right projects? Overcommitting your resource pool. If you don't understand what your resource capacity is relative to the demand, you're probably going to overcommit and then not deliver on all of the projects, and therefore you're not going to realize the value that you set out to get by investing in those projects. Constantly changing priorities. If you haven't sort of established what your strategic objectives are and you stick to those and you review those and modify those on a regular cadence, then your priorities are going to always be changing and you won't have consistency in how you're making your investment selections. Not being aware of your investment's alignment to your strategy, so investing in projects without really understanding how that aligns to your most important strategic objectives, in which leadership, executive, stakeholders all agree on. And then finally, if you don't have this framework in place, your inability to control change is reduced. So as variables come up, they change. As projects don't perform how you expect, things come up. If you don't have sort of a solid foundation and framework in terms of how you're doing your planning, how you're making your investment decisions, your ability to control change goes down. And I wanted to call this out. The tool isn't a panacea, so this feature set isn't the end solution. The tool really just triggers important conversations and dialogue around what your strategy is, what is the relative priority of your business objectives, how are you making your investment decisions, how are your investments aligning to the strategy. So the tool just provides kind of a framework to drive those conversations within the leadership and within the PMO. Just a high-level overview on what the project lifecycle looks like in the context of the creation and selection phase. So you'll start out, you know, with a lot of project proposals, too many, you won't be able to do all of them. You'll align those to your strategy. That will allow you to prioritize your investments or your projects relatively. And then you won't be able to do everything due to cost and resource constraints. So what the tool can do is help you realize which investments you should select based on their strategic value relative to their cost and based on your resource capacity relative to the resource demand at each investment level. And I'm going to show you, Prasanna and I are going to show you what this looks like in the tool. We'll walk through everything for you. And in the end, you'll have a committed portfolio that ideally represents the maximum value you can get out of your projects given your cost and resource constraints. Before you can go through that life cycle, there are a few setup tasks, and we'll walk through these in the tool as well as part of the demo. For strategy, you need to define your business drivers and prioritize them with leadership. On the demand management or project proposal side, you need to define how you're going to capture cost and then define the workflow. Again, we'll show you what that looks like. And then the resource planning side, Prasanna will talk about this, you need to define what your primary roles are. This could be a developer, a structural engineer, so you can do high-level resource planning. And you can set up generic resources which allow you to capture demand in the investments based on those roles. And then you'll need to actually input your named resources and align them to roles, and that will make up what your capacity is, or your resource capacity. And we'll show you everything in the demo that will explain this further. We'll do that right now. Let me switch over to the demo computer. So this is Project Online. This is the homepage here. We have getting started tiles that kind of walk you through some of the basic things, and you have your work, your projects, your approvals, your tasks, and your reports. The strategy piece is what we're going to focus on today. So strategy includes your business driver library, your driver prioritizations, and the portfolio analyses feature set where you do the cost constraint analysis and the resource constraint analysis. Just a quick thing, if you get your trial tenants and you first look at PWA in the trial, you won't see those. You need to enable them by clicking on this edit link button, go to strategy, and then just check these boxes here. Once you do that and you save it, they'll show up here on the left.
So look, I just want to highlight what you just said. Yeah. So basically, whatever we are showing in this demo, they would be able to go back and use that 3-month trial and start using it right away, right?
Exactly, yes, that's true. Online from anywhere. So let's start with the driver library. So this is where you're going to define your business drivers. Business drivers are defined by the executives or the leadership team. Typically what happens is they'll get together, start with a longer list, and it'll sort of whittle down until they have about 5 to 7 drivers. Business drivers really represent the strategy for the department or the org, and all investments should be aligned to these business drivers. And that alignment exercise should denote what the value is for that investment. If you have an investment that's not aligned to your strategy and you're still investing in it without, there may be exceptional reasons for that, but generally it's a sign that you may not want to make that specific investment. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. Drivers generally need to have 3 characteristics. You want them to be actionable, measurable, and unique. By actionable, they need to have specific investments that can align to those drivers. So for example, expanding into new markets and segments is a driver. It's a broad strategic objective. On its alone, it's not actionable, but an investment that would be something like develop a sub in an emerging market would be an actionable investment. The measurable piece, I'll actually click into the driver to give you a better look at what that means. So I click into the driver, and these have been predefined, but you would define your own drivers for your own department or organization. So business drivers have a name and a description. You can associate a driver to one or more departments. In this case, I'll leave it a global driver, no department setting, just for simplicity of the demo. Drivers can be active or inactive. The only reason you have an inactive driver is if you're not using it in subsequent planning processes and you just want to keep it around for historical purposes. The project impact statements, this is sort of the meat or the brain of the driver. This is where you're defining what it means to align an investment to this business driver. And we have sort of a 5-point scale here from none to extreme. This is where the measurable piece comes in. And the way you read this is, when you look at any investment relative to this driver, you want to ascertain what the impact of that investment is on the driver. And that can be none. In this case, the investment would not grow revenue from any markets and segments, all the way up to extreme. And here we've defined that specifically as the investment would grow revenue from new markets and segments by more than $3 million, and the investment would have to have a business justification to support that. But the idea is this is how you sort of start to align your investments to your strategy, and then how you can determine the value of that investment based on its strategic alignment. So the idea is the executives would agree on a set of 5 to 7 drivers. You may ask why 5 to 7? If you have too few drivers, oftentimes they're going to be too broad, and you'll find that too many investments align to all of the drivers, so you only had 3 drivers. It's harder to differentiate value between investments. If you have too many drivers, oftentimes that means that you're not thinking about drivers as strategic objectives, but more as programs or initiatives, and then projects sort of cluster against specific initiatives, and it's harder to do differentiation between the investments.
I just have something to share here. So this is one of those based on two-story kind of a thing. So one time I was working on one of these project portfolio implementations, and we are meeting with CIO, and I go, okay, you need to define your business drivers. What is your organization aiming at? He goes, there is only one driver, profitability. That's all. I'm like, no, actually, we might need to add 3 more to make the tool work. He's like, no, only one driver. So what can you say? It's like, okay, then you don't need to, either project drives profitability or not. You don't need portfolio analysis for that. But I thought that was a funny thing to share.
So yeah, you want to have 5 to 7, mainly so you can differentiate value between the investments. Once you have the drivers defined, not all drivers are going to be created equally. Not each driver is not going to be as important as each other driver. So you want to figure out what is the relative driver prioritization. And to do that, one approach, there are many approaches to do this. The tool supports a couple of mainstream paths. One is to have each member of your leadership team do a prioritization exercise individually. So in this demo, we have the CIO doing one, the COO, and then an HR exec. So everybody sort of, to avoid the groupthink, they kind of go off on their own and they think about how is this driver important relative to this other driver. The output needs to be a ranking of the drivers with relative priority values. I'll show you what that looks like. And there are a couple methods in which you can arrive at that. So let's look at the CIO prioritization. So it has a name description, you can associate it with a department, and that will filter the drivers that you can select here. But the biggest piece here is the prioritization type. There are two types, calculated, which is the main way of doing this that the tool supports, where you go through and do a pairwise comparison between each driver versus each other driver. I'll show you what that looks like. It's a more methodical way to arrive at a relative priority score rather than just sort of stack ranking or inputting your prioritization, relative prioritization scores manually. But you can manually rate each driver relative to each other driver. This is common if you have your own process that works for you that you just want to do outside the tool and then input the results in the tool. Or if you run through the calculated process, it doesn't quite look right and you want to tweak it, we give you the flexibility to do that. But let's look at what the calculated process looks like now. So it's pretty simple. Basically, you'll take each driver and you'll ask the question, how important is that driver relative to the other each other driver? So in this case, how important is expanding into new markets and segments? How important is that relative to improving customer satisfaction? And the CIO in this case chose is more important than. There's a 7-point scale that you can use here, anywhere from is extremely more important than to is extremely less important than. So it's just a way to sort of add a little bit of detached methodology to figuring out what the relative importance is between each of these drivers. So you walk through and you rate each driver against each other driver. When I hit next, what it will do is it will put the last driver I rated now on the left, and I'll rate that driver against each other driver. When you're done, what you'll get is a calculated relative priority score for each of the drivers. In this case, the CIO, based on his responses, is saying that increasing market share in existing markets is the most important driver, and improving employee satisfaction is the least. Exactly. Might not work for this company. The consistency ratio, just a quick comment on that. You can do things like contradict yourself in some of these ratings. Like you could say driver A is more important than B, B is more important than C, but A is less important than C. This just calls that out if you've done that. It's not necessarily, it doesn't invalidate the prioritization, but it's just an indicator. You may want to go look back at the answers and make sure they make sense to you. I've seen consistency scores that are lower, but the executives had, you know, their reasons for that, and it made sense.
So Luke, you mentioned that you actually follow this process within Microsoft IT. So how would you do this in real life? I mean, I know we can do this in the tool.
Yeah, so we actually do this for the project releases that we build. IT has done this in Microsoft, HR has done this, other organizations. In project, so this is what I'll get to for the next section. Once each individual in the leadership team has gone through and individually gone through the exercise and figured out what relative priority values are meaningful to them, then you want a consensus to be formed among each member of the leadership team. So you do an executive consensus prioritization meeting. And what we do is we sit in a room, each member of the leadership team goes through, and actually I'll just reference back to here so I can show you the executive consensus one has some issue. But what will happen is everybody will have a card, we'll have 7 cards printed out for each of these relative priority values. And we'll walk through and we'll say, what does everybody think of expanding into new market segments versus improving customer satisfaction? And everybody will hold up a card. Is extremely more important than? Is as more important than? And then we'll look around the room, and where we diverge, we'll have some discussion at that point. And the idea is to get to consensus on each of the ratings between all of the members of the leadership team. Doing that consensus will then output a consensus relative priority score, and then everybody needs to agree that, yes, those are the relative priorities for the drivers for our department or for this planning process. So this is something that everybody enjoys doing. It actually sometimes takes a lot longer because there's a lot of really good discussions that come out of this. People challenge the drivers, they challenge the relative importance of those drivers, they challenge generally the strategic objective, but everybody in the end has an opportunity to get on the same page, and then you have consensus among the leadership team, And that really helps downstream to sort of solidify the direction of the product and to make the right investment decisions that are going to align to these business drivers. Another tool for having these conversations is using a divergence of opinion chart. So this chart represents, let's see, it's a little bit cramped here. So the green represents what the CIO said the relative importance for each of these drivers are. The blue is the COO, and the orange is the HR representative. What this helps you do is you can see that the CIO thinks that increasing market share in existing markets is very important. It's his most important driver. The COO, blue, the HR exec, yellow, both think it's not very important at all. This can help you focus your consensus conversations in areas where you disagree the most. Where you agree, typically you don't need a lot of conversation. Where you disagree, you do. This is now available. This data is now available new in 2013 in Project Online in Excel via our BI OData feed. So before in past releases, this data wasn't available. Now it is. So you can feed in business driver, driver prioritizations, portfolio analysis objects through OData into Excel and build these rich reports. But again, this is another tool. Yes, it's great. Again, this is another tool to force these conversations. Like, that's what the tool's greatest value is, forcing the conversations, getting everybody on the same page, having everybody agree on what the strategy is and how they're going to align their investments and how they're going to move forward. Yeah, this is a really, don't work for this company. Yeah, I think it's Contoso. Avoid them. So once you have defined all of your drivers, and you've prioritized them, executives. Question? Yeah, so there's actually a somewhat complex algorithm behind this. I actually have a slide that kind of walks through it. I think after, if you come up here, I can share that with you. Okay, so once you've defined your drivers, executives have agreed on what the drivers are and what the relative importance of those drivers are, then you can start to bring in investments and align those investments to these business drivers. And I'll show you what that looks like. So we're going to go back to projects, the project center. Here are all the investments that we've inputted into the system. We're going to look at one called acquisition target analysis. And what we want to do, actually I'll go to the first page here. So what we want to do here is minimum, in order to go through the cost and resource constraint analysis, we need to define what the cost is for this project. We need to define how this project aligns to the strategy, to the business drivers that we created. And then we need to specify the resource demand for this project in order to do resource constraint analysis that Prasanna will go through. So each project will have a workflow associated with it. And this project is in the early stages of the workflow. If we go down here, we can look at the full workflow. And we can see it goes through phases of creation, selection, planning, managing, and measuring. We're in the early stages here where we're just defining what the project is so that we can go through the selection phase. So specifying cost, in order to do that, I would have already set up a cost custom field called total cost. And then I'd come in here to project details. And I would fill out total cost. Now, this is just a bucket for total cost. If you have a more elaborate way that you calculate cost, you can do that in an offline system and then bring in the output here. So I need at least cost to understand how much this project is going to cost and resources. I also need to align this project to the strategy or to assess how this project will align to the strategy. So I click on strategic impact here. And I see all of those drivers that I created earlier, and I see those ratings that I defined with the drivers. So expanding into new markets and segments, here we've rated this project strongly against that driver, and we're saying that if you invest in this project, expect to grow revenue from new markets and segments from 1 million to 3 million. Obviously, we need the justification to back that up. We can look at other drivers, improving employee satisfaction. It doesn't do anything for that. Product quality, nothing. If we go down here, reducing expense base, we're saying that if you invest in this project, it will reduce expense base by this amount. The idea here is we're These are our strategic objectives. We're aligning this investment to those strategic objectives in a measurable way. And based on this alignment, that will determine the value score of this project. So projects that have higher impact on drivers that we've said are more important are going to have a higher value. Therefore, they're going to be more likely to be selected when we go through the selection process, assuming that they have lower costs and that we can resource them given our resource capacity. So we've defined the cost for the project. We've aligned the project strategically. The next piece is setting up the resource demand for this project, and Prasanna is going to talk about how to do that.
All right. I just want to add one point to what Lucas. So in keeping with our title, adding objectivity, I think this itself it's the first step of adding objectivity to your project selection. It's not a bad process, but I have seen, I worked with many customers where the project starts first, then people think. They don't take the time. There's no real selection process. And sometimes you're in a catch-22 scenario where do you estimate and select first, or you just get started and work on it because the executive feels it's very important. So just by forcing this step in your process is the first step to objectivity. Although there is, I just wanted to, because we recently went through this with one of my customers, is how do you actually arrive at these values? It's not the PM who is just sitting and punching these values in. We encourage they work with the business, the actual requesting group, and the sponsor to come up with real values so that our results can be real. If that element is missing, then that could be a negative impact on the process again. So just be aware of that. There should be enough checks and balances in your process to make sure this all works. So coming back to my actual topic, as you can see, I can ramble a lot. So before you actually can do the resource setup or resource planning, we set up the resource pool in the tool. If you have been using this tool, you know that it's called Enterprise Resource Pool, where all your resources are housed. Again, I just want to take a quick check of audience. As of today, whether it is portfolio or anything else, how many of you actually use Project Server? And how many of you actually use, and which version is that, 2010, 2013? How many are, okay, let me, see, I get it. I'm an engineer I'm a mechanical engineer by education, so sometimes I just get into this loop. Okay, so let me ask you this. How many of you are in 2010? 2013? Okay, so there are a couple. So regardless of the version, I'm assuming all of you maintain some kind of a resource pool, even if all of your projects are not resource. Is that a good assumption? Okay, so you're familiar with resource pool, where the only additional element that is really, really required for portfolio analysis to work is something called a primary role. As you can see, I have all my resources that are set up with their metadata and all that stuff, but I also have one custom field called position role. We are grouping by that field, that's why you see that view. But you can see that there are accounting, there are analysts, there are business analysts, PMO, consultant. We are grouping, we are assigning this role to all the named resources and also the generic resource. So when we actually get to the resource estimates part, I'll show you, we are going to estimate using generic resources. We are going to estimate our demand and then figure out, do we have enough real people to carry out that work? And the way the tool is going to do that is summarize the whole capacity versus availability information using this role field. I have been asked many times, can think of role as a primary skill set. So every resource has a primary skill set. What do you want to use that resource for? That's how it rolls up into the capacity. It needs to be only one skill set. That's how the tool has been set up to work. So you got to figure out what is the best use of that resource. Kind of eliminates resource being, yeah, I can do SharePoint too, but my primary skill set is Project Server. So you might want to, that will eliminate that kind of confusion. Okay, which is the primary skill set? Okay, so the way you would actually, so Luke showed you how to put in the cost estimates. We have some custom fees that are set up. The way, we are also asking for resource estimates as part of our process because of, so that we can do some resource analysis. The easiest way to do that is go use resource plans. How many of you actually use resource plans before or now? Okay, so this was introduced in, if I remember correctly, in 2007, and I had no clue how to use it. For a long, long time, I didn't even know how to use resource plans. But it all made sense when we actually started using that in 2010. If you are not using resource plans, it is an easy way to provide your resource estimates without actually having to build like an entire schedule. If you're still in scoping stage, you will not have a good schedule to base off of. You don't have all the tasks identified and all that stuff. So resource plans give you a high level. Your resource managers will love it because this is how they think. They can tell you, okay, you need these 5 resources. I can give you 1 full-time equivalent for next 3 months. That's how they think. Okay. So as you can see on the screen, it's kind of already set up. So I have all my team built. That can be done with a simple action of clicking on build team. When I click that, it is going to pull resources off of the same resource pool that I showed you. So I figured out as a PM already that I need this skill set. The next thing is you can actually set up the units that you want to estimate in. Do you want to do it in hours? You can do it in hours. Do you want to do it in full-time equivalents? You can do it in full-time equivalents. Do you want to do it in days? You can do it in days. So in my case, I'm going to just do it by full-time equivalents. So I'm saying I need 1 accountant for the next 3 months. You can also set a date range. Let's say you don't have a defined start and end your project yet. You don't know when the project, how long it's going to take, but you just know it probably will take 6 months. So instead of trying to build a schedule around it, all you can do is you can just set date range and put in like a couple of dates for a start and finish. So that's how long you are asking resources for. In my case, I just set it up until the end of first quarter of this year for this project. And then finally, you can provide your estimates at a monthly level, weekly level, quarterly level, or a yearly level. If you are working on some of these engineering projects, you are talking years, not a couple of months. So you can, it is available in that scale. And finally, the one thing is, let's say you are building this resource plan, but there is other stuff going on in the company. I mean, people are still working on other projects that are in flight. So how do you want this resource demand to be shown? So you can set that by dropping this down. So in my case, I'm going to just say use resource plan because I don't have a project plan yet. But when I have a project plan, I can switch it back to project plan and say, now I have real data, real estimates. Use that to do all this analysis. Okay? So I'm going to leave it at that. We already have estimates. And once you are done, you have to publish the data so that the portfolio analysis module picks it up. Okay? And the idea is whenever you have this portfolio selection phase, generally happens, it varies. Some customers do it month to month, some do it year to year, some do it quarter to quarter. So it completely depends on your business dynamics. Okay? So I have attached a resource plan in our demo data that has been done for all the other projects as well. And now I will pass it back to Luke to go through the portfolio analysis.
Thank you. So now we have drivers defined, prioritized, all the investments in their system, they're aligned, we've defined the capacity for resources and all of the demand for resources in the investments. I'm actually going to quickly delete these. But now it's time to actually look at selecting these projects based on the cost and resource constraints relative to the strategic value of the projects. And I'll talk about what I mean in a second. So I'll start a new portfolio analysis session. This is an existing just for sake of the demo flowing more quickly. This will be for fiscal year 14. You can associate, like you can with drivers and prioritizations, you can associate analyses with departments, and this serves as metadata to organize your analyses. It also does some filtering within the analysis. There's two ways to determine project value. One is using business drivers, which is what I'm going to demo today. You can also use custom fields and do things like blend drivers with ROI and other fields. However you want to specify what a value of a investment or project means, you can do that. But we're going to focus on the value of the investment being determined by how it aligns to business drivers. So we'll do the prioritize projects using business drivers option. And it asks you to select a prioritization. We'll use the executive consensus prioritization everybody has agreed on. You need to select which projects you're going to look at in this analysis. And these projects are going to compete against one another for selection. You can define views. You can do filtering based on workflow stage, based on projects over a certain cost. There are some rich ways for you here to select which projects you want to include in the analysis. We need to define a primary cost constraint. So that's that cost custom field I had to set up in the beginning. That's the cost that you've filled out for all of your investments. If you want to do resource capacity analysis, you need to check this box here, analyze time phase project resource requirements against organizational resource capacity. Prasanna is going to show you how to do that a bit later. And this sets the planning horizon for that resource analysis and the granularity. You can do quarters or months. The role custom field Prasanna talked about, you need to set that. There's some advanced filtering options we don't need to talk about right now. This is kind of a cool feature. When you get to the selection modules, you can force in projects or force them out. Maybe they need to be done because they're a tax or for legal reasons. This allows you to identify a lookup table where you can, instead of just saying this project is forced in, you can give it a reason why. And I'll show you what that looks like. It'll make more sense when I get there. No, that's been there. Yeah, it's kind of hidden at the bottom, so you have to expand it out. So once I've defined the high-level parameters for the analysis, now I'm going to look at all of my investments, which are here, all the projects, and look at how they've been rated against all of the drivers, which are here in the columns. This gives me a chance to validate that these strategic alignment values are accurate. So me as a portfolio analyst, I could say, well, the Dynamics CRM deployment, EMEA project, you said it would have a strong impact on improving customer satisfaction. I don't buy that. I think it's more of a low impact. So you can change that here. It won't change it in the project. It'll just change it in this session. But it's really important you get these right because this is going to determine the value for each project. Remember that projects that have a higher impact on the more important drivers will have a higher value, so they're more likely to be selected. So it's really important that this data is as accurate as you can get it. So once I have reviewed that, it looks accurate, I'll go to the next stage, which is review priorities. Now we've calculated a relative priority score for these 31 projects in this analysis based on those impact ratings. And e-commerce portal development project, if we just invest in that one, it will deliver more value than any of the other projects because it has higher impact ratings against the more important drivers that leadership decided on. So if we do all of the projects, we can get 100% of the value. And I'll go into the analyze cost module now.
So Luke, just a quick question that I have seen from my customers. So what we just showed in the previous screen is a relative priority in that set of 31 projects, right? Mm-hmm. It's not absolute priority. So based on the strategic impact ratings, that can go up and down.
Right, yeah.
That's why I think, although, again, a real world tip, even though the portfolio analyst can do a lot of what-if scenarios in that priority ratings, part of your process should be to actually use that as identification. Okay. Why does this project doesn't have any rating? And rather than portfolio analysts trying to do it, we encourage to go back to the PM and have them work with the business. Who knows, portfolio analysts may or may not be objective enough.
Yeah, good point. So we can't do everything. When I go into the analyze cost analysis, what I'm going to do is say, I can't do everything. I only have this much money. Tell me which projects I should invest in that will give me the maximum amount of value for the lowest cost. It'll start you off at a baseline with everything selected, and it will tell you these projects will cost just over $22 million if you want to do everything, but that will give you strategic value of 100%, and all 31 projects would be selected. Now, let's say I don't have $22 million and change. Let's model what this would look like if I only spent $18 million. So I'll type in $18 million here. I'll hit recalculate. And what it's doing is it's trying to find the set of projects that you can invest in for under $18 million that will yield the maximum value. So what it's done is it selected all of these projects totaling just under $18 million. You're getting 93% of the 100% of strategic value. You're only now selecting 26 projects versus 31, so you've dropped 5 projects, but you're still getting 93% value. And if you scroll down, then we see that these projects have moved out, and you can see that these projects have relatively high cost and low value. So the algorithm is always going to favor high value, low cost projects.
Is one of those giving bonuses to the employees? It's probably
The moved out ones in this company, you would expect that, correct, yeah. So what I can do here now is I can save, as I'm kind of going through these scenarios, I can save them and I can compare them against each other for later analysis. So I'm going to save this one. I'm spending $18 million here. I'll call it the middle of the road scenario. Now, what if, more conservatively, I'm only going to be able to spend, say, $14 million? So I'm going to type in $14 million as my primary cost constraint. For the demo purpose, I'm just showing one cost constraint. You can actually add multiple cost constraints if you like. So I'm going to see what the portfolio selection now looks like if I drop the amount down to $14 million versus $18 million. And here I see that now 21 projects have been selected. I'm down to 81% of the max value. And I can see here that even more projects have moved out. Again, these projects are likely higher cost relative to low value. If we look at this efficient frontier chart here, what this is showing us is this curved line that represents at each spend level what is the maximum value that I could get by selecting projects intelligently. So at anywhere from $4 million, I can get 20%, all the way up to $22 million, I can get 100%. You want your scenarios to fall somewhere along that line. If they're below the line, it means that you're not getting the max value for the spend. And that can happen in cases where you force projects in and out, or force projects in and out that are higher or lower value. So for example, this tax checker project, this tool has said that no, you shouldn't do it. It's not going to give you the highest yield for the money. I can say, well, I have to do it. It's a compliance project. So I can choose force in. And I have some options here. You can set what these options are, what makes sense for your org. I've said compliance, executive decision, legal, and it's just a tax. Let's say that the tax checker project is just a compliance project. We have to do it. So what I can do is force that in, recalculate. And what it's going to do is it's going to still try to give me the maximum value for the money I'm spending, but it's going to respect the $14 million, and it's going to respect that I have to have this tax checker project in no matter what, and it's going to have to push things out because of that. And that can cause my scenario to go below the line. We see here it's actually pretty close to the efficient frontier. But if it did move it below the line because maybe that tax checker project was extremely expensive and gave me low value, you want to look at ways, that's a conversation piece too, to look at ways to get the scenario closer to the left, which means you're spending less money for the same value, or closer up to the line, which means you're spending the same amount for more value. Another thing you can do, another knob you can turn here, is you can actually change the cost of the projects on the fly. If you've done some analysis and you think you can do this merger and acquisition deal room project for $200,000 versus $600,000, you can change that here in the tool. It won't change it in the project. When you do something like that, though, you need to be careful that you're still going to deliver the same value at the $200,000 level. So that may mean you need to go revisit the strategic alignment of merger and acquisition deal room If you're going to lower it to 200,000, maybe it won't have as high an impact on some of the drivers. Question? Oh, right. Yeah, you'd probably want to have like the project center open in another window. We don't actually show you like that you've changed that. That's good feedback though. I think that'd be a nice feature. But you'd probably want to have a report of the project center open and track it that way. So now let me recalculate the scenario lowering that cost and see if I can get that project in. And again, every time I hit recalculate, it's going through this algorithm that's going to try to maximize value for the lowest amount of cost given the constraints that I've put in the system. So here I see that the project moved in at 200,000 and it didn't cost me anything to move out because I lowered the cost so much and there was enough buffer with the 14 million constraint that it could get that project in without pushing something else out. So I'm going to save this scenario as well. I'm going to call this one more conservative because it's a lower cost amount.
Just to show something off of the efficient front here, take one of the points at the very bottom for saving. So my squash core jacket eyewear would be a good candidate.
Yeah, let's try this. Okay, so force in, let's say this is a legal project, force it in, recalculate. And it may be that it's a little bit too scrunched. Yeah. But if you do that enough times, yeah, and the disparity is high enough, you'll see it actually visually move off. Another chart you can look at that is good to give you perspective and maybe force some conversations is the strategic alignment chart. What this shows you is the importance of your drivers relative to how the executives prioritize them. Against, so that's the light blue, how important are the drivers. The dark blue is, in this current scenario with the selected projects, how much are you investing in that driver relative to other drivers? So it can help you spot things like, in this case, increasing market share in existing markets. We've said that's pretty important. That's the most important driver. But we see with the current selection set of projects, we're under-investing in that driver. So that can force conversations around, well, do we have enough investments that align to that driver? Does that driver make sense? Does this disparity make sense with where we're at in our planning cycle? It can trigger those types of conversations that you can discuss amongst the analysts and leaders. Another chart we can look at is the scatter chart. This shows you the distribution of the selected and unselected projects. What you want is you want projects more in the upper left quadrant. Those would be projects that are low cost and high value. And you don't want projects in the lower right quadrant, which are higher cost and lower value. So this is just a visualization of the project's value relative to the cost. And then finally, you can compare scenarios side by side. And you can compare metrics between them. So we have the baseline where we're doing everything, and we have the middle of the road where we're doing some things. We can see the strategic value we're getting in each of these scenarios. You can add metrics like ROI dollars or whatever you want to sort of compare between scenarios in terms of the return you'll be getting, total cost. And then you can come down here and look at individual project, what's in and what's out in each scenario. You also have your efficient frontier here that maps scenarios along that line. So what you want to do is play around with a few different scenarios, find a scenario that you think is going to give you the best value, that makes sense for your org, and then what you want to do is move the projects that are selected in that scenario forward into the Analyze Resource module, which Rosanna is going to cover here. So I'm going to select the conservative scenario. And I am going to click on Analyze Resources. Once I do that, what it will do is it will move only the selected projects forward into the Analyze Resources module. The unselected projects will not move forward. And Prasanna will talk about how Analyze Resources works now.
All right. Okay, I realize I'm the only guy between you and Luke's awesome karaoke song, so we'll make this quick. All right. Okay. So if you remember the slide, again, I do realize a lot of you have actually are currently using this whole feature set. Our goal is to just impart some real world examples and stuff like that. So if you remember, one of the slides we had is you start with a lot of project proposals and it goes down like a funnel. So your goal is to come up with the best projects for your investment and then figure out whether you can actually resource them or not. Who cares if you can, it's very good idea to do 15 projects, but you can only do 5. They're never going to get, the remaining are never going to get done. It's much better to determine that earlier in the process and only focus on 5, get them done, and move to the next. Okay? So that's what it did, basically. It took the selected projects, like Luke mentioned, in the cost constraint analysis, and it kicked out certain projects based on what is not, which don't have enough resources. But, I don't trust this tool, so I want to figure out why those are getting kicked out. So what I'm going to do is get some screen real estate, just so that I can show you the charts. So we're going to hide those metrics. So the thing you're going to do is click on requirement details. Requirement details actually is a chart that shows you where the actual deficit is, why those projects are getting kicked out. So make sure you check that box just so that it shows the deficit in red. The top part of the chart actually shows your remaining availability, assuming you are doing these selected projects. So I'm going to highlight that they got selected because there is no deficit. Let's talk about the ones that do have a deficit. Okay? So if you really see, let's take audit tracking solution, for example. Right? So it is getting not selected because there is a tester missing. The requirement is point, these are all in full-time equivalents. 0.13 is, if one full-time equivalent is 176 hours, 0.1, you can do the math. But these are all representative in full-time equivalent numbers. The requirement is for 0.13, but if I really look at what my remaining availability is, where is my tester? Okay. So in January, I only have 0.02. That is why this project is getting kicked out. So what, in this scenario, what would you generally do? Any takers? Let's say you have this scenario in your analysis. What would you do? What are my options? That's a good one. Sorry? Leveling the resources, adjusting at a project level is a good option. That's a fantastic option. Eliminate testing. All right. So one thing you can do is what we call sequencing of projects. So you can, if you really see, there is availability, more availability in the remaining part of the year. So you can actually move it out, assuming your business is okay with it. The requesting group is okay with that, saying, okay, yeah, you can move my, I don't have a hard deadline to get this thing done. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to change this date to, let's say, the next quarter, the third quarter of the year. So for me to do that, I'm going to come back here and look at the Gantt chart, minimize that. Okay, so you see this column is the original start. This is what I can modify. So for audit tracking solution, I'm going to make that October of 2014. And then hit recalculate. So let's see if that, the caveat there is because tester is available in October of 2014 doesn't mean other skill set are available. So it's a little back and forth. You might go through a few cycles to figure out the right place to sequence it. Okay, so let's see. So audit tracking solution got moved in. Let's see if something got moved out. No, fantastic. So from a selection standpoint, it works. We'll assume it works for the business. So we got one more project in just by resequencing it. Not changing anything, not adding more costs, nothing. In some cases, adding a sequence, let me save this first. so that we can show you the comparison that is available. The other option that we can try and do is hire more resources. Let's say you get some additional budget, and you can hire those resources. We can see how that can be done. So move project to third quarter. Okay, so I save that. I'm going to go back to requirement details again. So there are, I mean, as you can see, there are other deficits and stuff like that. So let's say I get approval to hire one more resource. This is what happens in reality. People want to hire a tester or a trainer. They want to decide who should be hired. What the tool actually does is the opposite. It is going to figure out what is the best investment you can make. Maybe tester is not your best investment. You might want to do that project. Maybe a subject matter expert is the best investment that is going to give you value. So it is going to go back to that objective prioritization and keeping the alignment to the highest number possible to that algorithm always. So let's go back to the Gantt chart. I'm going to show you how to hire a resource. So all you have to do is, let's say I'm going to hire one resource. That's what I can specify. I cannot specify which role I want to hire. I'm going to recalculate. Let's see if that helps me bring in more projects. Okay, so something got moved in. So the dynamic CRM got moved in at a good, very good value considering the maximum relative priority is 7%. So I got, just by hiring one more resource, I have a good value project moved in. Okay, so now how do I know what is the tool recommending me to hire? That is obtained by clicking on reports and click on hired resources report. Okay, tested it is. See, so there's shortage of testers in this company, and that the tool is recommending you hire a tester so that you can do more projects, or at least one of the more value projects. If you have, and that number can be anything, you can hire more than one resource. And it will, once we save it, we can also see the comparison. So let me go back to the Gantt chart, just to make sure I can save it. Save as hire one resource. Okay, so that got saved. I want to see what the comparison charts looks like. Okay. So you can see that with hiring resource, I have 68% value. By moving the project, I can get a strategic value of 63.7% and baseline value of 59.5% based on if we don't do anything at all. So in my case, let's say, and if the resources have costs assigned and you have that whole thing set up, you can see the additional cost that resource will cost you. Let's say tester, $55 an hour, you can see, okay, for that amount of work, you can get the additional cost that you need to invest. Okay? So the other scenario that I constantly come across is, okay, let's say we are doing very well, the company is doing very well, we want to do all the projects. If I have to do all the projects, and what should my staffing look like? Where do I really have a deficit? Where do I really, if I have 25 PMs in my PMO, where is my deficit? Well, which projects can I do, which projects I cannot? So there is a report called deficit and surplus report. So in this scenario, if you did all the projects, I'll let the report come up. The report shows you where the deficit is. Okay, so if you wanted to do all these projects, you're okay for most part, but you are short on trainers and testers. So if you did nothing else, if you gained nothing out of this entire analysis, if you went back to your CIO, CEO, CFO, whoever it is, told them, give me, on average, looks like two testers and one trainer will cut it. Give me three resources, two testers and one trainers, let's hire them. You will be able to do this entire portfolio of projects. If you didn't get anything else, to me, this has been a very, very, very useful report in the past. Okay? So let's go back to Gantt chart. Now you can pick any scenario. Obviously, I'm going to pick the one that doesn't give me additional cost. I'm sure my PMO manager or a CEO will force me to do that. Question? No, just the ones that I show in the resource module.
So all the projects that made it through the cost analysis.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, we are only talking about how if I have to get all the remaining not selected projects in, that is a shortage I will have. All right. So the next step is figure out which scenario works for you better. Again, coming back to real world, this is a long back and forth process. Again, depending on how dynamic your process is. A lot of times you go with a scenario, the executive group don't agree to it. Then you come back, do another what if scenario, go back. Sometimes we go with three scenarios, they ask for a fourth scenario. But eventually, once the process stabilizes and settles in, it will be much faster. So the next step is to commit these projects into the system and make sure they move through the workflow. I'll let Luke show you that.
Okay. Do you have a question back there?
Yeah.
Many
companies use
Right, so I guess if you're looking at just the annual cost, you also want to look, you want to compare apples to apples, so you want the cost constraints at the investment level to also represent the year. So that's what you want to change. So in that case, you can have multiple fields, and you can ensure that those fields represent years, and then you can constrain the portfolio that way. It will, yeah. I mean, you have to set it up in a way that compares apples to apples, and it is still, you know, high level planning. So there, yeah. I mean, maybe we can talk after offline about some strategies to do that, depending on the scenario. Okay, sure, yeah. Let me just finish the commit and then we can talk about this a little bit more. So once you have the scenario that you think you want to move forward with, you hit commit. Commit does two things. One, it sets metadata fields on the projects. It sets whether or not this was committed in the cost constraint module or the resource constraint module. It sets what the start and end date committed fields are for projects in the resource constraint module. And if you've done the force in, force out, it sets that. And if you've done aliases for those, like compliance, legal, it also sets that in the project store. It also triggers the workflow. So if you have a workflow activity where projects that are selected move forward in the workflow, projects that aren't move to the side, to the unselected, it'll trigger that workflow and projects will flow through the workflow based on how you've defined it. So we'll do that here. We'll do a committed scenario in the resource module, and then you can look at those fields in two places now in 2013. One is going to be in the project center, so I'll go back. Let me actually close this. And let's go back to, I think you hid, there we go. So we go to projects, and you can go to summary committed. And then here we have a view that I've created where we've grouped projects by selected and not selected, and we've added things, these metadata fields, committed plan date, committed plan start date, completed planned end date, etc. So you can view these here. Another cool thing in 2013, a project online, is that you can actually pull this data into the BI center. And here I can have a report where I'm showing all the projects, selected and unselected. Maybe I just want to focus on selected projects. It'll filter those in Excel and show me, for example, all the selected projects by cost. But you can configure these reports however you want. The data, the point is the data is coming through into Excel, so you can build these rich reports that report out your selection decisions. So coming back here, I think that's everything. There's some related sessions you can check out. I think all the stuff is going to be available online. All the sessions are going to be available for streaming online after the conference. And yeah, so now Q&A. Go ahead. Yeah, it's a good question. So there is a section in the analyses for defining project dependencies, and you can define a couple different types. If you go up here in the portfolio analysis section, you hit project dependencies. You can define a few different types: mutually exclusive dependencies, mutually inclusive. If this project gets in, these need to get in. And you can also define date-driven dependencies for use in the resource cost module. So yeah, that can be done. Other questions? Yeah?
You said that cost constraint, is that for a period of time?
No, exactly. Yeah, so back to your point, the cost constraint module doesn't care about time. So the only way to make it care about time is by adding that meaning to the field. So if you call the field cost for FY14, and then you only set cost for FY14, that's the only way to sort of add that element to it. It wouldn't have that intelligence. Well, I mean, you could, if you set it up that way and you define only the costs for 14 in one field, and you cut off the cost for the next year, you could do that. It does start to add some complexity to it. Right, and you'd have to take that into account. Yeah. Yes?
Incorporate the existing portfolio which carried over and never finished, and it's running, and you want to add a whole new set on it. So you have existing in-flight.
Right. So for in-flight projects, there's a few things you can do, and Prasanna, you might have some thoughts on this as well. One is to only look at the remainder of the in-flight projects. So what is the remaining cost on this project? And then you may also need to recalculate the strategic value. What strategic value has already been delivered on this project, and what strategic value will I get if we actually finish it? So if you're going to bring in projects that are already in flight, you want to make sure cost and strategic value are representative of what the remainder is. Yeah.
I agree. One additional thing you can do is, if your process constantly is purely time-based, like the other gentleman was mentioning, there is a yearly budgeting process. It's by year. You can ask for cost estimates by year. In one of my customers' case, we do it outside in Excel when we collect all these estimates, and then configure the tool so that translates directly. That way, it's not a complete solution still, but it works.
Right. No, yeah, correct. That's a limitation of the tool. It's great feedback, though. I think it's an area that can be improved.
Yeah. Just to be sure, the resource part works that way. With resources, we are looking time-based. So it's already taking that into account.
So it does take resources.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. Consumer resources
could
not be available in the resource
system.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you are saying use cost resources and model it that way?
Like capital money, expense money.
Yeah. Honestly, it's an interesting thought. Honestly, I haven't.
I think you'd probably want to model you know, a couple of those in the cost constraint analysis, and then the actual people in the resource module. I mean, I guess we'd have to, maybe we can talk about it offline and how we'd break it down, but generally I think that's how you model that. Some of it goes into the cost constraint analysis, you do the high level filtering there, and then when you get to the time phase resource planning, you do the rest of it. Right. Right. It's more, I guess it's more high level, or again, you could add meaning to those fields such that they align to a certain time frame. Yeah. But there are going to be limitations there. Yeah. Yeah. Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we have the right field set up, but I can kind of show you how to do it. So here we have the cost limits, we have total cost. Yeah, maybe some people may break that out into, you know, capital cost. You can do whatever you want there. They're really just number or cost custom fields, and you just add them here. I don't know that either of these would make sense as a constraint.
Yeah,
you don't really want to get a certain amount of benefit, yeah. But let's assume one of these made sense as an actual constraint. You just add it here. And then the algorithm, though, when it's selecting the optimal portfolio, will respect both of these constraints and optimize for staying under both of those. Yeah.
Yeah. Things like net present value, you want to maximize those. They are not limiting factors.
Yeah, NPV ROI, you want to either add as a metric or calculate it in your value calculation using custom fields. Right. Any other questions? Okay, if you have more, you can come up here and we can talk as well. Thanks, everybody. Yeah.